Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Raptor Podcast. I'm Robert Scarpinito, your features editor.
Rutledge Doggett, site founder.
Andrew Stritch, boxing editor.
Boxing editor, because you've put Andrew Otten, our editor-in-chief, in a box this week.
That's it.
And he's not here.
Yeah. We finally did it. We duked it out. Who is the ultimate Andrew? And I prevailed. That's about what we were expecting, though.
Yeah. So Otten will not be here this week. Now, he's out this week, but we got you. We're here. We will chat about the Creator Clash later in this episode, which is what we've been alluding to. And also a game called Survival Fountain of Youth and a little bit of Overwatch, that new character that's in it. But first, let's dive into some news. Suicide Squad, Rocksteady's latest game since Arkham Knight. So it's been like almost 10 years now. Has been delayed once more from this year to February 2nd, 2024. This is after there were reports from, I think Jason Schreier broke the scoop, the news that there would be a delay. Because after that recent reveal, where there was a good like a third of the segment was about microtransactions and the gameplay just seemed like everyone had guns with like one or two special abilities about who they are, what they do. Generally, it just didn't show up well. You know, I think people were a little bit concerned, criticized it.
It did not land well.
It didn't.
The only positive thing people had to say was on the movement.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it.
Yeah. Like somehow everyone could kind of fly. Sort of.
Well, it makes sense. Like, what kind of shark do you know that isn't able to fly? Come on.
That's true. Yeah, that's all
the ones on the
fish.
Sci-fi channel.
Yeah, but this delay is kind of a big one, and it's one that was hinted at before with Schreier's reporting, and now that it's official, I don't know. It feels like sentiment I've been seeing online is a lot of people saying like. I mean, I've seen ranges from like people saying they should just cancel it to like, oh, like maybe they'll fix it, maybe they'll get rid of the microtransactions, but who knows at this rate, right? Like 9 months isn't that long, or 11 months ish.
Yeah,
isn't that long of a delay in game dev time?
Yeah, in game dev, I mean, a lot of the issues that people were commenting on are with the core structure of the game, with like the shoot enemies numbers go up. Get more equipment, microtransactions, battle pass, everything. That's like the core baseline of the game. That's not going to be something that they're going to be able to, you know, fully rip out as people were hoping. But then on the flip side, 9 months is more than we normally see a dev company get to patch, to fix, to optimize. So it's in this weird limbo of, you know, there's definitely going to be some big changes happening. People shouldn't be expecting that they come out and the game, like the game systems are entirely retooled. But there's definitely going to be some weird changes, which, you know, if you have a boat and you start doing patchwork fixes around the place, is it really going to make it better, or is it just going to mess with some of the synergy to... if they're going to change so much this late in the game.
Mm.
Especially since the core aspect of the game is the thing that nobody wants or is very unhappy about. Like, that's 9 months is a long time, but overhauling an entire, like, you overhaul the core systems of the game, you have to overhaul every thing that's connected to it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe they dumb it down, and by dumb it down, I mean, make it less gear dependent, less drops, maybe make things a little more meaningful. I feel like that's the only positive change they could make. Or kind of stick to maybe skip the gear completely and focus on the combat. Mm-hmm. Because you didn't have gear in the Arkham Asylum games or anything like that too. And they still felt great from a superhero perspective.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I feel like if they can maybe just say, all right, let's get rid of gear score, let's get rid of gear and just focus on the combat, focus on the gameplay, I think that'll make a lot of people happy. But on the flip side, it's hard to monetize that.
Yeah, that's if the aim is that they're going for the monetization, then they can't have, you know, no upgrades, no numbers go higher. So they're kind of caught in a situation where they can either please the fans or please the vocal fans that we've seen look at the game and say this looks bad due to its core systems, or they can please a fan base that they'll only get $60 out of or $70 out of and make a more traditional Arkham experience.
Yeah. But as we all know, single player campaign games are dead. They don't make much money. Nobody likes them really. So they have to do multiplayer. They have to do microtransaction live service, loot boxes and booster packs and all that, right? Or else.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, right. By the way, like the Final Fantasy 16 and the Breath and the Tears of the Kingdom trailers this week, those were awesome. I'm really looking forward to playing those games. That's wild.
And I love the post-credit scenes of the trailers where they revealed all the loot box mechanics. I think that really clinched it for me for both of those games.
I guess technically with the amiibo support, Tears of the Kingdom does kind of have a little bit of a it's not gacha, it's not loot, but there's definitely some level of, you know, question mark. Shit, are amiibos the only real NFTs? Because that's a single purchase that you're able to carry over and do something with in multiple games.
Yeah, but they're not unique. Each one isn't unique.
That's true.
Yeah, like
that's the whole selling point of NFTs.
Yeah, like we could all have the same exact, you know, Link amiibo.
Yeah, that's and it true. Special. Never mind.
Yeah.
But yeah, they look great.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I think they've both been received better than Suicide Squad was on that gameplay reveal, and that was like a long one too. So it was just a long amount of video that people could just look at and be unimpressed with it, you know.
And that was unfortunate. That was one of the past Sony state of plays, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of the ones they focused on. I think we talked about it too on the show back when it first launched, or when it first the videos first showed up, because it's just, I don't know, it felt very, I think I'm echoing all the sentiments you guys have been giving here, where they have to gut out all of the live servicey stuff that people didn't like, but it's the core combat too that's just not quite what people would expect when it's like, I'm playing as King Shark and I'm gonna kill Batman, right? Like you're not gonna do that with a gun. Like anytime Batman's up against a dude with a gun, you know Batman's gonna win. You know what I mean? But I don't know. It feels like there's going to be a lot of rework. Well, like it feels like there has to be a lot of rework to get the positive feedback they might be looking for. I don't know if I foresee a lot of rework being done though. Like the significant amount that the loud fans are expecting.
And they're definitely taking a big risk. 9 months is a long time, and also a lot of money in dev hours. So, you know, it has to pay off for them, or we're going to see it get shut down quicker than Avengers.
I mean, yeah, realistically, with the amount of delay, I have a feeling, though, if they released it, you know, on the original release date, the game would probably be dead and no one would be talking about it in 9 months. Mm-hmm. So there was, you know, likely some good hard crunching and some test audiences and stuff. And whatever's going on has to have looked bleak, for such a dramatic pushback.
Yeah. And it is a shame.
Well, I was just going to say like money wise, you've got to think every single person working on this project, this is now going to be a further 3/4 of all of those employees' yearly salaries, as additional going into this game.
Yeah. It's a shame.
It's gonna have to make that back. And the question is, do they do that by creating a strong game or by a boatload of microtransactions?
And when you think about it too, this is Kevin Conroy's last recorded performance that at least we're all aware of. And it's just a shame that it's attached to this project.
I think that they announced that it was.
Yeah.
He also was not voicing Batman in the canceled Scooby-Doo and Crypto movie that leaked.
Mm.
There was a small hope in the back of my mind as I was watching that leaked video that that would be like a better send-off, but he wasn't in it.
No. I mean, I guess like through all of this, I still feel like the story is the one thing I have the least doubts about. So, I mean, potentially, yeah. Like, I think Conroy's performance could show up really well here. It's just a matter of how much cruft are you willing to sift through to get to it. Potentially, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in other news, Xbox's upcoming exclusive Xbox game that's coming to Xbox Game Pass, Redfall, will launch with only a 30 frames per second quality mode on Xbox Series X and S, with a performance mode to be patched in at a later date that we don't know yet, but they are working on it.
This PC, is baby. Wild. Well, I...
Okay, let's take PC off the table, because like obviously, yeah, no, sure, you can run that at 4 billion frames per second if you get the right gear, right? But with console, we're stuck at 30 at launch. Yeah,
it's just wild that I tweeted about it when the original announcement went through. It's like Xbox has had such a strong lineup in terms of hardware and services. Like, the Series X is great. The idea to make a lower cost SKU for lower end, you know, devices, everything that they're doing with Game Pass, the families and friends plan, the streaming program, you know, a huge purchase of Activision. They're doing so much good to push their services and to make the ecosystem as enticing to be in as possible. And then they just keep tripping and stumbling on every single big game release. You know, they've released, you know, we've got Minecraft Legends, which people are responding well to. Pentiment, people absolutely loved. We gave it a 10 out of 10, I believe.
Maybe. I forget.
I don't remember.
We scored Pentiment extremely high. You know, they're doing great with their smaller stuff, and they're, you know, doing more and more routine releases with the smaller stuff. But every major game, every game that they would want to be able to point to and say, this is why you should be on our network, our platform, they keep tripping and falling. And it's like, as an Xbox fan, you're just waiting to see, okay, when does the other shoe drop? And it's like, you know, I think that this is, a lot of people made a lot of buzz about this. You know, I think that 30 frames per second is a bit weird. It's like, if the game was releasing in 60 frames per second, but at 720p, I think that there would be a whole lot more raised eyebrows of like, yeah, it feels like a step down from what should be and what is really the status quo. It's disappointing to see, and you're just kind of coming to expect disappointment more and more as an Xbox game gets near the finish line. Makes me feel even more worried about Perfect Dark, about
Starfield,
Fable, about Starfield. I think Starfield's actually been confirmed to be at 60 frames per second or something, which is, you know, wild.
I mean, hey, that's still less frames than the amount of bugs we'll find. So I'll take that. yeah, I kind of see where you're coming from, because I feel like when you look at Xbox's tentpole releases since the series, which the only other one I can genuinely think of is Halo Infinite. I guess there's Forza Horizon 5 too.
Yeah, right? You can also throw the Forza games in there.
Yeah, but I look at Halo, and I remember there were a lot of big Halo fans that were kind of, maybe disappointed is too strong of a word, but there were people who were like, oh, there's no campaign co-op, that's a shame, you know, on launch, right?
I mean, at all. They announced that there would be no campaign co-op, and then, weirdly enough, on the Xbox Series X, people found that you could like input a button combination or something. There was a way to force the game into campaign co-op, and it's there. Oh. It's there and it works. You know, there's a little bit of slowdown. They were able to recreate the same thing on the Xbox One, and that was just not functional. But it's just been very, very strange that, you know, there's just always some kind of, you know, arrow to the knee moment. I guess Psychonauts 2 was also, I mean, that was also a smaller release.
Yeah, kind of a cult, like sequel to a cult classic, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know, to bring it back to Redfall, so 30 FPS, so I'm of two minds with it, because like one, I think it isn't worth getting like so upset about it that it becomes your whole identity for the week on Twitter to rave about this. But I also think that it does kind of go, it's like a backpedal to what the Xbox Series X is kind of promising, right? Because it's promising to be like, this is the balls of the walls, you're spending $500, but you're, it's worth it because you can play every game that we will make and every game you'd want to play in like the best way possible. But if you want to save some money, here's the Series S. But now it's like, here they're not, I think there's the argument of like, what's the best way possible? Is it resolution or frame rate, right? But here they're not even providing the options at launch, and it is coming, but it does feel just a little bit like a stumble, right? Where it's like, we want to push this out to meet what, financial quota, maybe, you know, like our financial quarter,
probably,
but
yeah. Something.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm sure that people on the Xbox will figure out a way to toggle the 60 frames per second mode, and it'll work. You know, there may be smaller glitches that occur. You know, it's also, it's kind of a bit disingenuous going with the marketing, as all of the marketing that we've seen for the game has been 60 frames per second. And I agree that like this in itself, the Redfall 30 frames per second, if you're just looking at that, it's not a huge deal. It's a bit disappointing, but it's not a huge deal. I think a lot of the outrage, or a lot of the deeper takes I've seen, talk about how this is just the latest domino in a line of disappointments.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
It's definitely, I mean, we've seen a lot of this over the last couple of years, like pushing things out in a lower quality than expected to hit a deadline. And yeah, it's kind of frustrating, especially like you said. I mean, Series X was supposed to be the like balls to the wall version of the Xbox. And there's, I mean, at least for me, looking at the difference, there's not too much of a difference in terms of performance. Like, obviously, there is a difference, but to me, it's not enough to matter between the X and the S for what they're offering at launch. And I can understand why people are frustrated. I mean, I think quality matters, but at the same time, as long as it runs well, I think it's a little more forgivable, because I would rather have a game that maybe runs a little less pretty, but runs well, versus a game that runs pretty, but just runs like shit.
Yeah.
Because that's a frustrating experience. That's an instant return for most people. But if the core gameplay is good, the story is enjoyable, and maybe it's just not as pretty as it should be at launch, to me, it's fine.
Yeah.
You've also got to think, with it launching like directly in between Star Wars and Tears of the Kingdom, like it's already in an extremely difficult place to be.
Yep.
That, you know,
that July.
Yeah, it might just be that, you know, it's kind of getting sent out to die.
Potentially.
And we've seen that before as well.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, because that's the other thing I'm thinking, right? I know not everyone lives in that center of the Venn diagram where they play Xbox and Switch. I know that that's not every gamer out there, right? But I do think that, sure, Redfall comes out May 2nd, 30 FPS mode right now, but 60 FPS is coming. So is Tears of the Kingdom. And if it's anything like Breath of the Wild, it is going to dominate the gaming conversation for the next like month, at least.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be Elden Ring 2.0 from a, you know, saturation perspective.
Right. So it's like, sure, maybe the 60 FPS mode coming soon is like pretty soon. Maybe it's like the end of May, but it's like, all right, sure. But you've already had your first impression and it is what it is. And maybe only the hardcore fans will come back and be like, oh yeah, now it's in 60. That's a good reason for me to jump back in and play Redfall. But I don't know if it's going to be able to turn the tide, that Tears of the Kingdom tide, when it comes to, you know, like online engagement, people talking about it, people like word of mouth spreading, mm-hmm. right?
I mean, April, May, June are packed. You've got Star Wars at the end of this month. You've got Redfall, Zelda, Diablo, Final Fantasy, and a couple others kind of peppered in there that are a little smaller, but mm-hmm. like it's the wrong time to drop a game that isn't as optimized as it could be, because you're going up against Titans. Yeah. And I think that's the thing that confuses me the most about game releases at times. And maybe it's because I look at everything coming out on a regular basis and say like, man, this looks really packed. But sometimes I'm like, take a look at what you're releasing around and maybe rethink that strategy. Because if you're releasing right next to another Titan, your game has to be up to par in order for it to even remotely compete. And but I mean, again, and I don't know the inner workings of how you decide release dates, or kind of, you know, if it's tied to, oh crap, we only have this much runway in terms of money. But at the same time, I think sometimes you shoot yourself in the foot releasing during just an absolutely crazy period of time.
Without even then, you can have a game that is a total Titan in its own right, but if it releases around something just monolithic, then you can be screwed. Like, there were jokes around the release of Breath of the Wild and Horizon Zero Dawn about how people were putting down Horizon Zero Dawn, which is, you know, absolutely critically, you know, acclaimed. So many people love it. It's got so many sequels, yada, yada. But at the time, people were like, oh man, fucking Breath of the Wild killed any conversation about what was going on in Horizon.
Yeah.
Elden Ring, too.
Yeah. Elden Ring killed it for
The stuff that was around it.
I think part of it though with Breath of the Wild to Horizon is that I think there's such a direct comparison video games. Like, they're both open world, right? They're both about like bow and arrow. So there's a lot of direct comparisons to be made there, where there was a lot of people who I think found the sentiment of Breath of the Wild just does X better than Horizon Zero Dawn to be kind of true, you know. But one thing I kind of want to devil's advocate here, if let's bring it all back to what every gamer prays to, the frames per second counter. So we're looking at Redfall, 30 FPS on launch on console, and we're generally projecting like, oh, that's kind of a shame. It's unfortunate, right? And then we're going to look at just 2 weeks later, Breath of the Wild 2, Tears of the Kingdom, is going to come out, and we're projecting it's probably going to be a huge bang out success. I personally project it will struggle to maintain 30 in every aspect, just because Breath of the Wild also struggled with that.
The hardware hasn't changed much.
Yeah. So I'm curious how we're all feeling in terms of like, is like, if Redfall was 60 FPS, would we be more like, oh yeah, it'll stand up to Tears of the Kingdom?
No.
No, I don't think it makes a difference.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. And I think
there's definitely the two conversations to be had in its weakening its own presence. The image of itself that it's putting out is weakened by saying, hey, we're not gonna have this thing that you would normally want in a shooter. But regardless of if Redfall was absolutely running flawless, if they were like, hey guys, psych, we're able to launch this game at 4K 120 frames and it is not going to drop a single one, frame timing is going to be perfect and locked, everything's going to be great, it's still going to get fucking drowned by Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's just, there's no avoiding that. It's the first Legend of Zelda game that is it's the first Legend of Zelda game since probably one of the most popular Legend of Zelda games, and it is a direct sequel. It's just like, this is the monolith. This is another monolith from Nintendo.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I still see people posting videos of crazy stuff they're doing in Breath of the Wild. People still love doing that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's only going to get weirder from here. Like, we're going to see a video on YouTube in like 4 years. It's like, did you know you can put Ganondorf on your stick and hit people with him? Like, we're going to find that shit.
Somebody's going to figure it out. Yeah.
Hey, if you place all of these items here and then go fight Ganon, when you teleport back here for the final battle, you can put them together and you can make a giant crab mech, and that will defeat Ganon for you. And like, we're going to look at that and go, huh, cool. And then just like swipe by, because we've already seen 12 other giant battle crabs. It's like, this game is going to be ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do love that this is just a Tears of the Kingdom podcast now. I do love that the way they're approaching the marketing for this one is so radically different from Breath of the Wild. Because I remember Breath of the Wild, you know, it was coinciding with the launch of a brand new console that people were like kind of question mark about, right? Because it's a hybrid. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know at the time, like, oh, will that work? But they had like that 6 hour long Nintendo treehouse of like, we're just going to play Breath of the Wild for 6 hours so you can see what it's like. And that was what convinced people. And this, Miyamoto's like, give them 2 seconds of footage and then we wait 3 years.
Yeah.
And we'll give them a minute, you know?
What's also very interesting is how they went with the mechanics trailer first. To be like, you know, this like get your, I mean, already conversation is, the game's not even out yet, and already conversation is being dominated about what people are hoping to do with this game. But to go with it with the mechanics first, because of how much that has become just a part of like TikTok and short culture, and then to only release just like a smidge of this continued story. And it does look like it's going to be more story heavy, which is good, because that was a big complaint about Breath of the Wild. And they're also doubling down and capitalizing on all of the story that they put into Hyrule Warriors, which is
definitely a great video game I have played.
It's really fucking good. It really feels like Breath of the Wild, but a Musou, as opposed to just being like a Musou with a skin applied to the top of it.
Fair enough. Well, while we're talking about Nintendo, our last news story of the day, Nintendo has announced that their Nintendo Live event is coming to Seattle, Washington in September. Details are a little bit scarce right now, but this is an event that they have done for years in Japan. I think the last one they did was last fall in 2022. And then, you know, COVID happened a couple years before that, but even before like in 2019 and previously, they would do these events there. But this is the first one they're doing in the US. And to me, I can't help but feel like E3's cancellation is somehow related to this. I mean, you know, Nintendo hasn't historically been at E3's for a while. They've always kind of done their directs just before it, right? Mm-hmm. But this just kind of feels like a response to, well, if we're not going to be at an E3 event, we have to do something in the US. And I guess this is their answer.
I mean, everybody else is doing it too. I mean, Sony's got theirs. Microsoft has their 27 they do a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes logical sense that Nintendo would start putting something together. Not just for press.
Mm-hmm. And Seattle makes sense because this is where their America headquarters is.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's also another event that happens in Seattle in September, correct?
PAX West.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if, in the same way that, you know, Devolver had the parking lot across from E3 or something, that this will be, you know, there will be PAX East, and then across the road will be Nintendo with a huge space set up. And they'll still tie it in.
Yeah, like ideal state, I feel like that would be great, because in Seattle, they just built an extension to the convention center that is kind of across the street from the main one. So I could totally see like Nintendo just takes up that space and then the rest of PAX West happens where it usually does. But I could also see Nintendo being self-important enough where they're like, we'll wait for our own weekend because we're important. We deserve our own time and our own space.
I probably just said September because PAX West hasn't actually announced dates for this year yet.
Yeah.
Too. So I would guess they're trying to avoid it.
I'm sure they're in talks with like with any event space in the city. I'm sure they already know that like which dates they can't use because, you know, an event is happening. Like, you know, they probably have way more knowledge on what's going on than we do.
Yeah. But this event is going to be all about like gameplay, you know, demos, tournaments, like for Splatoon. They're going to be concerts to celebrate Nintendo music. But I mean, I think we should probably temper people's expectations. This is not a place where you should be hoping for a Switch 2 announcement or Breath or Tears of the Kingdom 2, Too Breath, Too Furious. Like, we're this is not a place for real news, I think. That's just my guess.
It'd just be like
it's probably just a showcase.
Yeah, a chance for people to get their hands on with stuff coming out.
Yeah. I think it's truly a place because like if you look at their site for it, it really pumps up the family friendly stuff, which I mean, Nintendo's whole brand is very much like that. But it seems like the angle they're going for is like, come out, bring your kids, you know, and all celebrate your love for Mario and, you know, Zelda together.
Yeah. That'll be where we get the announcement of the Legend of Zelda movie, I'm sure.
But they just like sneak it in at the end of the concert, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, here's Star Fox track movie from our new. Let's go. Oh, geez. You get to see them get their legs amputated in real time.
Family friendly.
Yeah. Very it's all good. Beautiful.
Yeah.
The dark secrets of the Nintendo games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I do wonder if Nintendo plans to bring this to more cities throughout the US, because I mean, like, there's a lot of Nintendo fans out there. They're all not just here in Seattle, right?
Yeah
Be smart play.
Yeah, I could see them doing it, like if they paired this up with PAX West, I could see them doing the same for PAX East, like Boston in next March or April, do another Nintendo Live there, right? And then they got to start a PAX Florida for Stretch, so that way Nintendo comes down to Florida.
There's just shit all that happens in the South.
Well, that's not completely true. You just spent the weekend at an event.
Yeah, the one event that big event that Florida has, the second Creator Clash. So it was 24 different fighters, ranging from, you know, a variety of content creators. One of the surprise faces that I saw was Harley from Epic Mealtime.
Oh.
Which, like, I remember watching Epic Mealtime videos in high school. Mm-hmm. He was facing off against WWE's John Randall Hennigan. And it was his first time boxing, which was wild. From start to finish, super cool event. On Friday, I went to the Floridian to check out the press conference beforehand, which, you know, the press conferences that you normally see are serious people talking about their prep and this and that, but with a whole bunch of like very comedy focused YouTubers and other content creators, it just kind of turned into a weird roast. But like, also no one wanted to like actually piss each other off,
right?
So that was really cool.
So to rewind a little bit, like Creator Clash, for people who don't know, can you explain that a little bit? Just like, what is the Creator Clash?
Yeah, it's just it is a charity boxing event that was started last year by iDubbbz. The whole point was just get a whole bunch of creators, and each of them can nominate a charity that they wish to that they wish to have funds be donated to. And then they raise a whole bunch of money and put on a big boxing match. So, you know, each of the bouts was 5 rounds. If they lasted that long, and it was just from like 6 PM, there was like a pre-show with Markiplier and, Jacksepticeye. And it was just like 6 hours of watching 12 bouts of boxing. This was the second one. They've always been hosted in Tampa. I'm sure there's some reason behind that.
The weather's nice.
Yeah, for the indoor arena, the weather is great.
That's great, yeah.
You know, part of me is wondering whether Florida has been picked because my guess is that there's just some more relaxed rules on how amateur you can let a fighter be to be in like a televised arena, like insurance wise or something. I don't know. I just always assume the worst with Florida.
Or there's some sort of tax loophole going on here, maybe.
Yeah, it's like it's weird because you would expect it this to be, especially for a whole bunch of like Californian content creators. You would expect that LA would be the place to do it, but yeah. they're all here.
It could be a cost difference too in terms of renting a space in LA versus Florida.
Yeah,
that as well. Ironically, there was a chess boxing tournament that I know Point Crow was in a few months ago.
Explain chess boxing.
So they would, I believe they would get up there and then they would play chess. And then after playing chess, so that they'd be in a boxing ring and have a table set up in the middle and they would play chess. And then afterwards they would box. I didn't look into it too much, but I did see some funny images of, you know, people like, you know, in all of like the silk boxing duds, just sitting really intently over a chessboard in the middle of a boxing ring.
Yeah.
Did they have to move the pieces with the gloves on? Because no, that would be phenomenal.
Yeah, that I don't think so. I don't know.
Yeah.
I did not look into it too much.
I've seen a couple rounds of it. So it's like boxing where it's like each round, right? But except the first round is boxing, the second round is chess, third is boxing, chess, you know, like back and forth, right? And the way you win is you either knock out your opponent or you checkmate them. It's one or the other, not both.
Interesting.
Yeah, but it's just whichever one happens first, right? And I think the struggle is even if you prep for chess, right? Like you study all the tactics and you know all the openings and whatever, you're still doing it while your heart's fucking going 90 miles per second, you know, sweating out of every pore, muscle sore, you know?
Concussion.
yeah.
But yeah, so some of the content creators there that I was, you know, really excited to see there, Alana Pierce, writer at Sony Santa Monica, Marisha Ray, one of the founding members of Critical Role, Crank Gameplays. We've done interviews and coverage on the TTRPG show Kolok in the past that he was a big part of. And it was really cool to see just the different approach. Leonhart, who's a former Pokemon master, was there, which was great as a surprise. His walkout music was the original Pokemon theme song.
Oh, fun.
And he had Jason Page, the original singer, there singing it live as they were walking up. He had shorts that had the fire, water, and grass energy symbols on them. And on the back of his robe was the fighting energy symbol, which was just like perfect. Chef's kiss. And aside from that, there was just a shit ton of creators around. Harley from Epic Mealtime got punched so hard he hit the ground and, you know, with enough momentum and rolled out of the arena. Collapsing on the three that were doing the moderating and the commenting for the stream.
Wow.
So that was pretty bonkers to see.
That's very WWE.
It is very, very WWE.
Yeah.
There was a certain look of like when he came to on the table, there was a certain look in his eye that was just like, he does not know where he is right now. There was a moment where he was standing up and there was a fist coming at him. And then he sat up and like Moist Critical was to his right and he was laying on top of a monitor. Mm. That was pretty, pretty insane to see. Yeah. But the crowd was great. Everyone was getting super into it. There was some weird fucking chants going on. A whole lot of people chanting out to twist his dick. Which was
Did that happen?
Just, you know, it felt like if you had a whole bunch of YouTube commenters in a giant arena together for some reason.
That's what I was going to say. It's basically the YouTube comments. Wait, IRL.
This is Twitch chat live, basically.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And also Crash Bandicoot came out for a bit of a comedic mid-time show, which was cool.
Did he spin?
He did not spin. He did faux beat the shit out of someone else, though. I didn't actually know who these other people were, but they were coming up and doing an obnoxious YouTube thing and playing the obnoxious YouTube character. And Crash Bandicoot came out of nowhere and beat the shit out of them. So that was, I've been a fan of like, realistically, I came to see like Marisha Ray, but I've been a fan of Crash Bandicoot for way longer. So it was really, really wonderful for me to be able to see my hero in person.
I don't know why, but I'm imagining like the WWE meme of, you know, like by God from under the ring, RKO, RKO, but it's like, it's Crash Bandicoot just coming in out of nowhere.
Crash Bandicoot with the steel chair.
Exactly.
It did have big steel chair energy.
God, that sounds like a lot of fun though. Cause I remember I've peruse the first Creator Clash and I always from afar for a second thought like this is some weird ass like like third degree YouTuber kind of stuff that like you need to be in really into YouTubers in general, like as a whole vibe to be into it. But it's nice to know that it's like a charity thing too, which is cool. Yeah.
Alana Pierce had a really great walk out that was had Chris Judge, you know, saying boy, girl, and then she came out wearing like pelts and stuff in a very God of War looking outfit. Jessica Negri right behind her in a like done up to the nines, like big flapping wings outfit. It was really fucking cool. A lot of the intros for like those gaming relating creators that I've talked about, I did, you know, capture and get up on my Twitter, as well as like all of the Critical Role cast being like hood down, shrouded like, you know, pious monks behind Marisha as she was coming out and then popping off. So I've got all of their walkouts and stuff up on my Twitter, and we retweeted a bunch of them from the Tech Raptor account. So if you want to see some of the lunacy and the craziness that went on at Creator Clash. Oh, and also Ego Raptor, who came out in a shiny pink, like sailor outfit.
Fun.
And his pink boxing shorts had like a giant bow at the back. Like he went full magical girl and it was amazing.
Beautiful. That sounds like a lot of fun. I'm glad you had fun. You were able to like see it there too, like in person. I imagine that experience is very different than, you know, watching it on YouTube, right?
Yeah, I could imagine outside of the arena, you would probably like really want to have more of that like deep buy-in for like YouTubers and YouTube culture. Like some of these boxing matchups, I was not aware of anyone involved. But being there, seeing the excitement, seeing people waving signs, you know, holding up different faces, different in jokes from the different gaming communities, it was really cool to see.
Nice. Oh yeah. Rhett, you've been playing Survival Fountain of Youth. What is Survival Fountain of Youth?
It's a survival game in the vein of what you're typically used to. in that you are one of the sailors on the ships that went looking for the Fountain of Youth. And the goal is to find the Fountain of Youth, but you shipwreck. And so you're the only survivor on one of these islands. And you basically just have to start from scratch in terms of picking up items around, and starting to kind of make your way across the island. What I like about it is that, like with most survival games, as you explore the map populates. But in this, you actually have to map it. So you have a mapping skill. So you've got to essentially build a campfire and make mapping charcoal. And then either you can just kind of explore and map and get like a small part of the map, or you can find a tree to climb up into and map from up there and expose a much larger part of the map.
Is this like a you right click on your mapping charcoal and you say map what I can see, or do you need to like draw it yourself?
It's a you open the map and hit space to map. Okay. Basically. Yeah. And whether you're you know, in a tree or not in a tree, it does the map based
chips
off
the radius.
Right.
Yeah, so it kind of forces a bit of exploration, and as you unlock the map, you start to see where resources are too. So it's the map gives you a lot of information in terms of here's where to find chamomile, here's where to find, you know, long sticks and things like that. It's still like, and you would think that would make the game easier because most of what survival games is finding resources to build things. But there's a lot you have to kind of contend with that makes it more difficult in terms of I could be, you know, hacking a tree down and well, shit, a scorpion just climbed up my arm and stung me. And so now I'm poisoned and I need to go create medicine to cure that, or it gradually gets worse to the point that it starts damaging you. So it's like mild poisoning, severe poisoning, fatal poisoning. And so there's a lot of kind of different systems at play. You can get sunburnt if you're not wearing enough like leaf clothing, get cuts, wounds, stuff like that. And everything has a different medicine that restores that. And if you faint, the game doesn't end. You go back to wherever your bed is, but every time you faint, you lose more of your full health bar. And so it gets more challenging and you have to find life water or water of life or something. I can't remember what it's called, but you either find it. I'm still, you know, maybe 10 hours in and it's pretty expansive. And that'll restore kind of part of your health bar. So you've kind of got to progress through the story in order to find some of these items. And there's just a lot of option in terms of equipment and things like that. A lot of enemies that you don't expect. Like you'll just be kind of walking along and a snake will bite you. You'll be like, where did you come from? Because they blend in pretty well with the environment. And you can't really see scorpions particularly well either. There's like harpies, which are basically hawks, wolves, like boar, so on and so forth. And everything's got different resources. And kind of starting to build up your base does take like a lot of effort, and not everything is necessarily handed to you.
Right. Wait, is this a like third person isometric, like
first person?
Okay.
So think kind of Valheim,
like the forest.
In that vein, basically.
So in your 10 hours, have you found the Fountain of Youth yet?
Not even close. I'm still on the first island. There's like 5 islands, I think, total. So there's the starter island, and then you have to basically, in order to unlock more islands, you have to find these specific like tablet pieces to unlock the next one. And then there's also like a level of, I don't want to say like puzzles, but there's these murals that you have to find to unlock perk points to kind of add more survival skills. And there's books littered throughout the map that will give you more skills for fishing or athletics or whatever. But there's a lot where it's like, you need to find this grotto. It doesn't tell you where that grotto is. You basically have to continue to map the map in order to find it and a lot of these other like higher level resources.
Interesting. That sounds pretty good. Is it early access or is that fully out now?
Early access on Wednesday, I think.
Oh, gotcha.
The 19th. And so there's a lot of stuff still in the game that's like not yet implemented, but it's still very fleshed out for how it's early access. I haven't run into any like performance issues. I've had a handful of bugs that just go back to the menu, reload, and you're fine. But it runs very smoothly, and I
clean 30 frames.
Clean 30 frames.
Clean as expected.
As expected. Yeah. No, but it's really good. Like, it's engaging. It kind of, you have to stay engaged throughout. It's not just go chop down trees for an hour. It's chop down trees. Oh shit. You got to go back to your base and go get your energy back and drink some water and, eat some food and stuff like that. It's not, you're always doing something at the end of the day. So,
yeah. Well, that sounds pretty good. Sounds like a lot of fun. And that survival Fountain of Youth come into early access on the 19th, you said? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. I've been playing the new hero in Overwatch, you know, Overwatch 2, that Blizzard game, the hero shooter thing. So there's a new character out, Life Weaver, which has been, people have been a little bit worried about his implementation in the game because he does something new. Where his main part of his kit is he pulls characters to him, like your teammates. He pulls teammates to him. So the idea is, you know, like, oh, if one of your teammates goes in too deep, you pull them to save them. But I think before he released, there was like some early like beta content out there where you could fudge it in a way where if you stand next to a pit, you could pull your teammates to the pit and watch them die. So everyone was kind of worried, like, oh no, there's a lot of troll potential with this character, you know.
I mean, isn't that not too dissimilar? Isn't there another Overwatch hero that does have like a hook that they can pull people and like
Roadhog?
But yes, but yeah. So you want to pull them into the pit so they die. Like there, that's a good thing to do. Here it's only your teammates that you can pull. So you don't ideally you wouldn't want to kill them, but
is Life Weaver also a healer?
Life Weaver is a healer, is a support. So his healing output, I don't know. At first I thought it would be like a little lacking because it doesn't feel good to use. It's a thing where you have to pulse it, where you have to like charge it up and then let go to shoot the healing like ball at your teammate. And it tracks them, so you don't need to aim like precisely, but it's still like as you're doing it, you're like hold left click for a second, let go, hold it for a second, let go, hold it for a second, you know, and that doesn't feel great from a gameplay perspective, you know.
Not compared to like Mercy or Lucio.
Yeah. So it's just a little, I don't know, I think that's tricky, and I think they're looking at reworking that. But he can like both heal or do damage by like shooting kind of a volley of thorns, because he's like very plant vibes, lotus vibes. But you have to swap between those two like Mercy does, like, so you can't just do both at the same time very easily, which I know is a big point of contention as well for his kit. But I think I was worried about Life Weaver's potential to troll, but after playing a lot of him and playing on teams with him, I feel like so far, fingers crossed, the Overwatch, you know, people who play this game kind of use his kit for generally the greater good. There's still going to be unfortunate timing, you know, especially if you're playing like random, like with randoms, you know, there's going to be the unfortunate, like the tanks going in deep so they can ult, but then as they ult, Life Weaver pulls them out of position and then they waste the ult. You know, I think that's just gonna,
it's gonna happen.
Just gonna happen. It's the unfortunate part of all this. But
that's what I was gonna say. This sounds like the perfect hero for when you're playing with a group of people that you know and are like all over headsets. But like if you were like, this is my plan, and then someone else is just like, nope, like not even if they're pulling you into a pit, but just like, nope, different plan.
Yeah.
That's gonna be annoying with zero context more often than it will not be.
Mm-hmm. And since he launched, they did patch it where you can't pull people into pits anymore. There's like kind of an invisible wall over pits for his interaction, like his pulling interaction.
That's smart.
So you at least can't fuck people up that way. But I think it is still a little disorienting. Like I was playing with some friends and like one of them, he got like charged into, so he got knocked back, and then he got stunned, and then I pulled him out of it, and he was like, for like 5 seconds, I didn't know what was going on. Like, you know, your camera moves around, and it's like, it's all in first person, so it's very disorienting, I think, to players when they get pulled from by him, because it's like, it's still new to the game. It's a weird feeling. It's a weird mechanic, right? So yeah, I think he's an interesting addition to the game in terms of just his mechanics and kit, because there's no other character that really does stuff like him. Because he also has a thing where he can throw down a platform, and then whoever steps on it gets raised up, like friend or foe. So, you know, for like a friendly interaction, you can, like, if someone wants to ult and their ult's like line of sight based, you put them on the platform, give them like the height, and then they can, you know, they have more opportunity to like a, you know, the Cassidy ult, right? They have more opportunity to actually like land their shots.
Yeah.
And there was one interaction I did where the enemy, their tank stunned the entire team except me. And he was about to charge into them. And so I put a platform right in front of him. So as he was charging over it, it lifted him up above the team, and he didn't hit any of them. So there's a lot of interesting interactions there that I think we're only scratching the surface of, because it's such a weird thing. And I'm pretty sure Blizzard is also scratching the surface of it, because I doubt they have thought of every potential weird thing that this kit can do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I don't know. It's an interesting character. And the character design is also pretty cool. It's a Thai character. I think the first Southeast Asian, maybe. I can't think of any other one. But I don't know. It's just interesting playing Overwatch 2 in this state, because I feel like a lot of people complain about it. Like, it's always complaints about the battle pass, complaints about the characters, the heroes. But when you just sit there and play it, like, without taking it too seriously, because if you take Overwatch seriously, like, you're kind of a knob. You know, it's chill. It's,
you not play fun. Comp?
I don't. I refuse to play competitive, because you play quick play and there's enough people there that make you think it's competitive anyway with the way their attitude is. So
fair.
I'm like, I don't even bother. I don't even care, you know? But yeah, I don't know. I want more time with Lifeweaver. You know, I want to figure him out a bit more, but I think it is an interesting change to Overwatch's dynamic, you know?
Yeah.
But I think that does it for this week's episode of the Tech Raptor podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please feel free to give us a thumbs up, hit subscribe if you haven't already, and let us know down in the comments below, how do you feel about that Suicide Squad delay? Are you curious to see if it'll improve after we find out more, or are you writing it off? Let us know in the comments down below. And if you want more from us, you can check out techraptor.net, where we're always publishing news, features, reviews, etc. throughout the week. But if you want more of this show, we will be back next Monday, and we'll see you then.